come to the 64th annual OA birthday party. Together we get better. In person, January 12th to 14th at the LAX Hilton in Los Angeles, California. Meet fellows from across the globe for a weekend-long extravaganza of workshops, panels, special interest speakers, food, entertainment, fellowship, laughs, and recovery. Highlights include body image workshop, big book study, sober eating workshop, keynote speakers with unique stories covering all aspects of eating disorders, dance party and comedy show, yoga and meditation, meetings and meetups for LGBTQIA, BIPOC, Spanish language, young people, and AAPI members, boutique, shop till you drop, and much more. Registration is now open at oabirthday.com. Staying the night, book your room now at a discounted rate through oabirthday.com website. Act fast, rooms sell out quickly. Why? There is a solution. You will hear from speakers who have various versions of this disease and who live happy, joyous, and free. Because together we get better.
Okay, great. Okay, I'm Jonathan Singerman, compulsive eater. Grateful to be here. Thank you, Michael, for asking. And, my apologies for running a few minutes late. Bill, it's good to see you. I've been a compulsive eater all my life, probably as far back as I can remember. I was always stealing the food, even throwing up from eating too much of it. I remember I had a lot of problems on the home front, and there's a lot of anger issues that I still live with today. I remember I ate tons of pancakes, and I was all uptight about something, and I threw it all up all over this inside this my best friend's father's car. And I used to steal food around town all the time. I was a thief anyway. I always stole from my mother. You know, she had a nervous breakdown a year after I was born, and never really recovered till the day she died. So that kind of messed up my image of women. If you were, you know, my mother was very pretty, like Elizabeth Taylor, drop dead gorgeous. And so I equated, because I was just too young to understand what she was and how she was dealing with life and all of her reactions. It just seemed to me like she was just a total loser to me. I mean, I didn't know what I had in front of me. So that's how I looked at women a lot. And if you were pretty, it meant you were stupid, because I equated her mental illness with, you know, intellectuality. And she was a smart lady. She'd been a school teacher in the state of California, which, you know, there's good teachers and bad teachers, but I don't think I've ever met any dumb ones. And, you know, and so she was pretty smart and a college graduate and everything else, but I equated her, her prettiness with being stupid. And so if you're pretty, as most women look to me, you know, certainly when they're young, and I just assumed you were stupid. So I had this very horrible attitude towards women. And it's been something I have to work with to this day. And then she was always sweet and loving and kind, a very sweet lady, as sweet of a mother as you could imagine, you know. But I equated that with weakness. So, you know, with women being, you know, a lot of women can be very firm and strong, as like I have a whole bunch of female bosses, right? And I have to recognize that just because they're telling me something in a sweet, kind way, it doesn't mean that they don't mean what they're saying, because they do. And I've been fired from enough jobs to find out that the hard way. But, you know, unfortunately, I've got a rock head and have to find out a lot of things the hard way. I remember that she was always very good to me. She would give me rides to events I had to be at. My father used to take my brother and I to school sometimes, and a lot of times we'd walk. You know, we lived in the Pacific Palisades. We had a great neighborhood. My father was a World War II vet, a self-made man, so to speak. Built his own business, and was fearless, and my mother walked in the shadows of his footsteps. And you know, he never hit her or anything like that. Almost never yelled at her ever. But I can remember. I know that he was taking her for into the hospital from time to time for to get treatments and things. And one time, I had snuck out the back window because I was getting punished, and he put me in the bedroom at. I was in Blair Hills, which is near where Fedco used to be, over there by Rodeo and La Cienega. I, you know, across the street were all these oil wells, and I snuck out across the street, and I was with all those oil wells, and it's pretty scary if you're a parent to think your kids are going to be around oil wells, because you could get killed, right? And, you know, he dragged me across the street back home and just beat the crap out of me with a belt, and I crapped in my pants. He just beat me mercilessly, man. Because he was, you know, from the old school, you know, you just don't do things. You just don't go against your parents. And so I learned the hard way not to mouth off to him too much. But I was always overeating in between all this stuff going on. I had, 5 years of inappropriate touching, say 3 years of fairly hardcore child molestation. You know, the babysitters from ages, I guess I was from 7 to like 11 or 12. So I had all that going on. So with all this stuff between women and looking at homosexual people as child molesters, I think I was like 40 years sober in AA before I finally realized that most gay people are not child molesters. You know, probably 99.9% of them are not. But, you know, so all those ideas, preconceived ideas, which I have a lot. A lot of times I look at somebody's face, I'll think they're a certain way just by the way they look, you know. You know, like a guy like Bill, you know, you'd look at him, he's dressed all casual and everything. I would never know a guy that had such a distinguished career. I don't want to break his anonymity. But, you know, so a lot of times, you know, my parents, with black people, I grew up with the N-word. That's how my parents, my grandfather on my father's side, referred to black people. Okay, and they were from Missouri, and really they're Russian Hungarian, so they're immigrants too, as many of us in this room, certainly I was, from my parents were Russian Hungarian, my grandparents rather. So I grew up with all these different prejudices and things like that, and all these skewed ideas of things, alcohol and drugs, on top of that, helped, dissipate all those feelings and of hatred and hostility and fear. I had a ton of fear. I still have to deal with my fear daily. And it's okay. I'm able to do that today, by walking through it, and when I walk through the fear, whatever it is, I get less hungry. But when I started procrastinating, I started eating, I used to eat till I was like stuffed till there's no return. And in sobriety, I came to you guys when I was 18 years old, about 50 years ago. I'm almost 70 now. And in those days, OA was just a gray sheet. Everybody was crazy about weighing and measuring, and there was only one type of food plan, the gray sheet, and they were really nuts on it. But I could not understand what you guys were talking about. You were speaking to me in a different language. And I came back after being sober in AA 5 years. And I'm grateful to AA. If it wasn't for AA, I wouldn't be here for sure. Because Michael often says, I wasn't not very concerned about my food problems when I'm, stoned out of my mind on alcohol and drugs and drinking. I didn't think I was alcoholic when I went to my first AA meeting. I took the 20 questions. Called Are You an Alcoholic? I didn't think I was. It said I definitely was, but I didn't believe it in my heart. And in OA, they have like something called the 15 questions, and some of you may have seen it, called Are You an Compulsive Overeater? And I've taken that a few times, and I got them all yes, except for one. Just the one that said, have you ever been to a medical facility or, to a doctor because of your overeating? And so I said no, right, because I never had been to a compulsive overeating food unit. But what I had was multiple sprains on my ankles from falling down and twisting my ankle from being overweight and chasing after my kids, because as I got sober later in life, I got married to a nice woman, and far better than I ever deserved, that's for sure. She's a tough, hard Brooklyn, New Yorker, and very clear in her mind. She had been a compulsive overeater from New York OA and lost 150 pounds. And she'd been a stockbroker. She'd worked for stockbrokers in those days. They had the key punch department. She didn't just key punch in everything directly like is done a lot of days with a lot of people. And you know, in accounting, I know we do that a lot. We punch in things directly. We don't give it to a key punch department. But in those days, they had these key punch departments, and I don't know, however many people would be on those departments on Wall Street punching in, you know, thousands of transactions. And my late wife was in charge of that department for like 10 years. So she was obviously a very together woman, a very decisive woman. And, you know, but me being who I am, I always bitched about her, that she didn't do this, she didn't do that, and had this problem and that problem. I'd be looking at her weight instead of my own. And, you know, I'd been in and out of my weight problems many, many times. But, and it seemed, you know, I tried going back to OA when I was 5 years sober and lost like close to 50 pounds. And like I said, she and I met, and our relationship was more important than the program. And, you know, we were gone from OA a year before we even knew we were gone. And our weight came back on, mine came back on, and I hated you guys for 32 years until I came back. Michael and I go to a men's stag on Friday night a lot, and they go out to dinner at the Keto Mosque, well, at least we used to. And he's sitting next to me, and I'm watching how he's eating. I said, gee, man, you're eating really healthy. And he starts explaining to me how he's eating, and then later on that night, he was walking in the parking lot with me, and he was 12-stepping me about Overeaters Anonymous. And you guys were the last thing I was ever going to do. But by that time, I'd been going about a year and a half with chest pains 4 to 5 times a day. I'd had diabetic sugar levels, and my blood pressure was very high. And, you know, all these other problems that I was having as a result of my overeating and being, you know, as you can see, I'm only 5'4". And, you know, I was up to like, well, last time I weighed was 243 when I weighed. So I was close to 100 pounds overweight, 90, 95 pounds. However you want to look at it, I looked like twice as big as I am now. And, you know, I was dying from the food, and I did not want to admit the kind of trouble I was in. But when he started 12-stepping me, I asked him if I could start calling him, and he said, yeah. And I started calling him every day, and at the end of a week, I asked him if he could be my sponsor. He said, I thought you were. He said, I thought I was your sponsor. And I said, no, because I didn't ask you, because I remember when my AA sponsor moved away, my first AA sponsor, and Don Newcomb, I can mention his last name because he's dead now, but he said, well, Johnny, who's your sponsor? Because I'd been away with basic combat training and all that stuff at back east. And came back, and I said, well, it's Tom H. I'm not bringing his anonymity because he's still alive. He's well, alive and well in a assisted living in Aberdeen, Washington, near the ocean, I guess it is. Anyway, so I asked Don to give me my 4-year cake, and at the meeting, I thanked him for being my sponsor. And he said, after me, he came to me and said, you know, you never asked me to be your sponsor. And I humbled myself. I said, would you be my sponsor? And I knew I had to do that with Michael. I knew I had to humble myself to be with you guys. And then after a week, he said, you know, he was on me to get to meetings. And he said, well, you know, you got to go to meetings. You got to respect the OA program the same way you respect the AA program. I thought, no wonder I couldn't get what you guys had. And I was calling him my food to him every day. And he didn't ask me to necessarily. He was asking me to call in what I'd eaten. But he didn't ask me to commit right away. But I started committing right away because I felt I had to. And that worked out pretty good. And I've been committing my food to him now for 13 years and 12 days. But, you know, who's counting, right? But so it's been 13 years and 12 days since I've eaten white sugar desserts or white sugar peanut butter pizza. Those were my binge foods. He had me write them down on the face of the big book. And I call him 7 days a week, whether I'm in Arizona or Israel or D.C. or wherever the hell I am. I call him every day. And Bill and I and Michael and a bunch of other guys are on the phone. Not a bunch, but 3 or 4 guys. And we do our readings and some prayers and stuff. And, you know, I thank God every day for my sobriety, but also for my abstinence from compulsive overeater. And I thank him, you know, I ask him to help me keep my food clean. You know, we just went through Thanksgiving, and I committed my appetizers for lunch, then my turkey for dinner. And I didn't eat that much turkey, you know. It's like, because I get gout, and it's another nice benefit of overeating, you know. If I eat red meat, especially too much red meat, any type of meat, then I get a real thank you from God. It's God, often kids say the pain's not that bad. It's only when the air hits it. So it's pretty agonizing. You know, I would go like 2 weeks with it. It's funny. I heard Michael's sponsor, Terrell, speak at the Sunday morning 7:30 permanent recovery meeting about a week and a half ago. He was talking about that he had diabetes in the family, which I've had in my family. My uncle, died of diabetes, and he had a toe cut off and went blind from it and everything else. And Terrell was talking about that they said he would go blind from overeating. And he said, but he hadn't gone blind actually, and just would get a little gray, so it hadn't gotten that bad yet. And I was laughing because that's what I was doing with my food. I have these chest pains like 4 to 5 times a day. You know, I'm like spitting in the wind at God's mercy that, you know, I'm not going to die from overeating and still taking a chance eating, you know, that 10,000 calories a day. I was just killing myself with food, killing myself. And so one day at a time, I started coming back to you guys. I got commitments at my OA meetings. I'm secretary of 2 meetings. You know, one of them is every other month, and one of them is like every Tuesday night. They asked me to be secretary there in San Francisco Zoom meeting. And they're 100-pounders meeting, but I guess they were okay with me being in their meetings. I've been going to that for like 4 years, and I go to this 7:30 a.m. meetings. You can tell I'm not real good at early morning stuff. I never really was. But especially now when I have to wake up a lot in the middle of the night because of another thing I'm dealing with. But, you know, it's okay. If I plan better, I would do better. And sometimes my planning really sucks, and there's no excuse for that. My life is better since I've gotten to OA because in sobriety, a lot of times if I had problems, whatever they were, like my wife and I would argue or whatever it was, I would eat my way through those problems, the fears at work. And when I started abstaining from compulsive overeating, and I had to deal with the problem much more directly, and I didn't have any choice in that. And doing that allows me to have the freedom of not being so crazy. How's my time doing here?
About
5 minutes. Okay. So my life has gotten a lot better since I started abstaining. I met my girlfriend in OA. It seems like my late wife, I met her in OA. It seems like I meet all my girlfriends in OA. I don't know what the hell that is about. But I've never dated any women. Well, I had a long relationship with any women in AA. I was kind of sweet on one girl for a while, but my life is good. It's better with her than it's been. We've been going together for about 8 years. It's been about 19 years since my wife died from cancer, and she left me with 4 beautiful kids, and I've got 4 grandkids, and they're the joy of my life. I was just with them on Thanksgiving. We had a wonderful time, and I was driving down there with my girlfriend, and I like going down there with her. She loves the kids, and it's so funny, but I really, like, one of my favorite things is to see how happy she is with my grandkids. She's so happy because she was not able to have kids. She has dogs, so her dogs are her kids. She loves those dogs like life itself. I mean, I love my dogs too, but they're not my kids, you know? And they're good dogs. I'm very blessed. I got them from a friend of mine who died, she had somebody else was supposed to take them, but the woman's husband had cancer and was supposed to get surgery, so she couldn't take them. So I got the 2 dogs, and it's like the 3rd time of dogs I've had. I've had dogs before, and I love dogs. They're great. They make great security for the household. You know, they make a mess. They cost a lot with the vet fees, and you know, they're pain to train. You know, sometimes this one I got this time. She's a Belgian Malinois. But my kids love the dogs. They say, oh, Dad, can we please keep them? And, you know, Dad's the one who's got to always clean up the poop and everything else. But you know what? I don't have to clean up the poop. I get to clean it up, you know, because I have good eyesight. Because if I kept on my compulsive eating, I probably would have been one of those guys who had his toes cut off and gone blind. And so I get to go outside and pick up the dog poo. I don't have to. It's like I don't want to go to work, but I get to go to work. I didn't want to come here today. You know, it's a long drive from Santa Clarita, and I don't want to cry about it and all that stuff. But, you know, I don't have to be here. I get to go here. I could have told Michael no. It wouldn't have been the end of the world. But they say you can't refuse an AA request, and same thing with OA. You can't refuse an OA request. So, and I've gotten to do some good commitments in OA, and, you know, I don't try to take on too much anymore. But, you know, so there's some commitments. They asked me to be on the board on Monday night, and I was for about 3 years almost. That was a good commitment, and it made me feel a part of, and I got to be real close with some OA members that way, because when you work together, as you know, you got to work things out. You can't just hate each other all day long. And when I start hating people, which I do sometimes, I get my resentments, and, you know, I want you to forgive me, but I don't want to forgive you, right? That arrogant ego pride. But, you know, it's like the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous talks about, we can't, you know, resentment's the luxury of the normal man. So, or woman too, obviously. So, you know, I have to pray for you if I got resentments. And I have long ongoing resentments, and with all the hatred in the world going on, you know, it's easy to fall into and join sides up with, you know, because I could justify my hatred or bad behavior, but that stuff just makes me hungry. And I don't want to go back to being that, that person who was nearly 100 pounds overweight, you know, dying from the food. Because I don't have another 32 years to go back out and come back. Certainly not at 7 years old. You know, I'll be lucky if I make 30 more years anywhere. But I'm a nicer person when I'm not overeating either. When I used to come off the white sugar dessert binges in the morning, I would take out that hostility on my kids a lot. And my middle daughter still lives with me. She's bipolar and has all kinds of problems. But the first thing she said to me in the first 6 months of my abstinence, she said, "Dad, you know, you're a lot nicer lately." And she, you know, and all three of my my three daughters, they're all probably about 100 pounds overweight. So, you know, and so you get to see the example me of you know, of not binging out of my mind. When I was at Thanksgiving, everyone's overeating all those desserts and stuff, which I used to binge out of my mind on there. I used to eat tons of that stuff, especially when you weren't looking. After Thanksgiving, I was always eating tons of that crap all day long. You know, they've seen me be relatively, you know, at a quasi-normal weight. Probably got about 10 pounds to lose, probably. But, you know, I haven't been that horrible overeater now for... You know, I'm still in that overeater. I'm always going to be that overeater, but I haven't been acting on it for, like I said, 13 years and 12 days. So I'm really grateful to be here. OA has provided a great way of life. I'm looking forward to going to the OA convention, the OA birthday party, which, you know, you can go to OA, like BD, OABirthdayParty.com, and I think you can find it that way. Or just go to the OALAIG website, you can sign up and go on. I got to sign up still to register. But I'm grateful to be here. Thank you guys for letting me come here and talk to you, and I hope somebody new or sicker. Thanks for my life. Thank you very much for reading that. Okay. This is the time for questions only. There is no sharing at this meeting. If you need to share, please do so with any one of us after the meeting. Also, please remember that the opinions of the leaders are my own and not those of Overeaters Anonymous as a whole. When asking questions, you need not identify yourself. Please remember, if you ask a question, your voice may be audible on the OA podcast. Leader, please restate the question after it's asked. Okay, we'll do that. And we'll get a five. Okay, so I guess we got questions for... Yes, Ms., go ahead.
Thank you. How did you work your fourth and ninth steps over your parents?
Okay, so the question is, how did I work my fourth and ninth steps over my parents? So the fourth step, first of all... I had written all that in AA, and Michael told me I didn't have to redo all that again, so I focused. But he also had me meeting with one of his other sponsees at that time. I don't know that he really does that anymore, but at that time, that's what he did. I would meet with one of his sponsees, like every other week. We went to the coffee shop, and we'd go through this pamphlet called The Unofficial Guide to the 12 Steps. It was written by a member of AA named Dr. Paul, who's long deceased, but... His great talks go on, and basically it was just reading the first 164 pages of the big book and going through it. They had a bunch of questions on it, and that would be the way to go through the 12 steps. So when it came to my fourth step, I didn't really have to rewrite too much on that topic, but my counterpart did. But for me, the fourth step it's not only about my parents, it's about everybody. So, you know, and to see those patterns in there. But with respect to my parents, you know, I wrote, you know, I stole money and I was very, you know, abusive to my mother. And I hated my mother when I got sober because I blamed her for everything, right? I couldn't blame myself. So it was either blame my poor innocent mother. And she was, again, this is the sweetest woman as you could ever imagine for your mother. I mean, she was the nicest lady in the world. So how I could blame her for who I became is just, it goes to how, what a, you know, how dishonest I was with myself. But I did have to identify that, and I came to learn about that. And so my living amends to my mother. My mother had a hard time talking. She was a good listener, but a lot of times my two brothers and I would get with my dad. We'd go out for Sunday brunch, and we'd all be talking counting. And she'd hardly have, you know, she'd hardly be allowed to say a word because we're all so busy talking. And I remember when my late wife and I would go with them. She would say, "Jonathan, you guys are so boring. You're always talking about accounting. Why don't you, you know, talk about something else?" And I, little by little, I tried to learn to let my mother talk. So I tried to interrupt, you know, my dad and everybody else and let her have a chance to talk. And so my living amends to her was doing that. But I never really could quite make that amends to her. I don't think I really made the kind of amends I wanted to make to her. So a lot of times I do what I saw my late AA sponsor do, that when there are people who are mentally handicapped, you know, to make a point to go up to them in the meeting. So there's usually somebody in the meeting that nobody wants to talk to or wants to bother with. So I try to make a point to go up to that person and at least shake their hand and say hi, because I may not want to talk to them either, right? So, but you know, it's a program of contrary action. So if I go up to someone who's mentally ill, and there's always somebody, and usually in the meeting who's a little off, needs some help, that's a living amends to my mom. And as far as my dad is concerned, you know, my living amends is just trying to be the best person I can be. He set a great example with education. I mean, he was highly educated, and he skipped three grades and throughout his education. And I think he graduated 3 years before most people and from high school. And he went to LaSalle College on his own, So, you know, I went to college and got my degrees, additional degrees. Not that that stuff ever helped me with my compulsive overeating, because no matter how smart you are, you know, for me, I could always rationalize with my own line of BS no matter what intellectuality I came up with, it never helped me with my food. You know, it's a program of doing, and so, you know, I still commit my food to Michael each day, and I try to look at what I'm eating to see, you know, like the things I eat, like, for example, oatmeal, for example, I measure that every day when I have, you know, my half cup of oatmeal. And, you know, I try to look at things that are on the boxes. I mean, because I eat a lot of frozen dinners. A lot of times I come home after work, it's late, and, you know, I don't want to make dinner, so I'll just have a frozen dinner, and the calories and everything's on the box. I have a very good idea what I'm eating. When I have a banana, I know it's one banana. I know it's, you know, if it's a giant banana, it's 115 calories. If it's a smaller banana, it's 104. So I have a pretty good idea what I'm eating. So I may not weigh and measure everything perfectly on a scale, but I have a pretty good idea what I'm eating when I'm looking at it. And I use the MyFitnessPal too. Michael's always beating up on me to use that thing. It's a computer price software. So it's a good thing to use. I used it today. And so I was going to go over my 2,000 calorie limit, because I know my height and body weight, if I don't want to gain weight, I got to stick to like 2,000 calories or less. And if I, you know, so all this stuff again, you know, because you're asking about my parents, but it all comes back to the food. It really does. I mean, you know, when I'm eating healthy, I'm less likely to be nasty when I'm talking with you. And especially getting arrogant and prideful and egotistical, and all that stuff comes back. So I don't know if that answered your question fully or not, but that's pretty much all I got on that. So living amends, that's the bottom line. Anybody else? Oh, yes, miss.
Thank you for your share. Can you tell us a bit about your spiritual practice?
Yes, the lady asked, could I tell you about my spiritual practice? Yeah, I forgot to talk about that because, you know, some people say they bring themselves into the food, and I was totally into the food, and that's all I took in the food was me. So, you know, I remember after 30 days, I said to Michael, I said, well, you know, I'm getting hungry again while I'm eating. What do you do? And he says he does this prayer. And the prayer goes like, God, thank you. Say it before you eat, and say it multiple times if necessary, which for me a lot of times it is necessary, especially if I'm really hungry. And I said, God, thank you for this food. Please let it be enough. And there's a woman who says that prayer in the Voices of Recovery. That was one of the daily readings. And then at the end of the meal, I say, God, thank you. Please let it be enough. And then I say, I'm sorry. After I'm done eating, I say, God, thank you for the food. So by bringing God into the food, I have less chance of overeating the food. I'm not perfect about it, but I have a better chance. You know, if I overeat anything, it's too much fruit or something like that. You know, I don't go back to eating the white sugar desserts or that stuff ever. You know, and I know if there's cake or candy out there on the table, I know that's none of my business. And in my house, there's always cake and candy and all that sweets. And because it belongs to my kids. And I remember after about a week of abstinence, I was at a meeting and somebody said, I shared I had all this food in the house. They said, why don't you throw all that out? So I was going to throw it all out. And I thought, I better call my sponsor. And Michael says, was it your food? And I said, no, it's not my food. It belongs to my kids. And he said, well, that's their food. It's none of your business. So I put their food, instead of leaving it on the kitchen table and staring at it all day when I eat my food, I put their garbage food in what I call the none of my business corner. So it's in a corner over there. Yeah, when I got to get glasses and stuff and dishes, I can see it. But for the most part, you know, I try to remember that food in that corner is none of my business, you know. And that seems to help out. If there are garbage foods in the refrigerator, I just try to have it in my mind. It's none of my business. But I think the other really important thing to talk about, the spirituality and not binging and not, you know, overeating and compulsively overeating. You know, bringing God into the food and spirituality program comes as a result of all these things I do. So going to meetings, having commitment in meetings, you know, trying to work the steps daily. Like every day I roll out of bed on my knees. I thank God for another day of sobriety, another day without tobacco, another day of abstinence, you know, of staying off my binge foods. And I think, and by doing that, and I ask God to guide me throughout the day, and I do that, you know, second step, and, you know, thank Him for restoring His standing, and I do the third step prayer. And a lot of times when I call Michael and the guys, we do our little prayers together too. And that helps me to be a little more spiritual and a little less angry and impatient and nasty. And, you know, you're a lot nicer guy. And there's a lot of people say, gee, John, you're such a nice person. Well, I'm really not a nice person, but I can act nice. I can act differently than I feel. And every time I take a contrary action to not be that SOB, then I'm, you know, I feel better and I don't have to act that way. And, you know, Clancy used to say you can act your way into right living, but you can't think your way into right acting, you know, into right living. And he was right. And so up to this day, I still have to try to act differently than I feel. And again, I fall short a lot and I lose my temper with my kids and girlfriend still, but, you know, especially if she's beating on me about something, whether I'm guilty of it or not. You know, I got to, you know, own my part. So, you know, again, I'm not perfect at it, but it's a hell of a lot better trying to, you know, to work things out and go forward and try to ask God to give me guidance to do the right thing. And, you know, even today, I fell short today coming here, but I'm saying for the most part, I do feel better when I do that. I hope that answers your question. Yes, Liz.
Hi, thank you very much for sharing your experience, strength, and hope. Can you tell me a little bit about your weight loss? So you said you lost a bunch of weight in the second time around. How much did you lose, and what did you do to lose it?
Okay, so the question is about my weight loss. How did I lose it? How did I gain it back? And how did I lose that again? So when I came back to OA for the second time after being 5 years sober, I guess I was around 23, 24 years old, something like that, you know. 50 minus 9, it would have been 45 years ago. So yeah, I was about 25. And I went on a pretty, at that time I did go on gray sheet. I was weighing and measuring and doing all that stuff. And the weight came off. I lost like 45 pounds like in 3 months. And I was exercising. I was running with a friend of mine in OA. We used to go running all the time together. I'm not going to talk to you about my exercise because it's not that great lately. I've been trying to get back to that on the weekends. Usually I go Saturday morning. I didn't go today. But usually I try to go on Saturday morning before I go to my meeting, which is an on-Zoom meeting. So the weight came back on, you know, at first slowly, and when I slipped and started eating all my white sugar foods and all that stuff, then it started coming on pretty fast. So when I started abstaining again, I did not do gray sheet. I'm not on gray sheet, but, you know, calling in my food. I knew I had to eat smaller portions, so I stopped eating myself, you know, like eating so where I was so stuffed I was ready to fall over. And I started eating healthier foods because if I overate, you know, fruit in the morning, it wasn't going to be too bad. And usually I have a good, healthy breakfast. I just started eating a lot healthier. I started eating, you know, like fruit and my oatmeal in the morning and lunch, like a sandwich or salad and, you know, and fruit. And then dinner, I just try to look at make healthy food choices. You know, I know it's not a healthy food choice to eat fried foods. So most of the time I don't eat fried foods. Now this year for the turkey, my son wanted a fried turkey. But, you know, I still had like, I could tell it was a very small piece, like that, you know, a couple pieces like that, and a few tiny pieces like that with it, in addition to that. But I know, in other words, I didn't stuff myself, so I was ready to just throw up or something afterwards. So I try not to eat like that all the time, and, you know, just trying to eat lighter meals. And I look at the MyFitnessPal, and, you know, Michael's got me on that a lot, and the more I use that, the better off I am to see if I'm going to go over. So I force myself, so like today, for example, you know, like I'm going to take my girlfriend out for dinner tonight to have a steak. So, you know, red meat's more fattening. So I eat a lot less red meat. Most of the time I don't eat red meat that much anymore at all. I eat chicken or turkey or something like that. But, so eating just foods with a lot less fat, and it just seemed to come off on its own. But the interesting thing is it's the spiritual practice that allows me to think and act like that. So having a foundation in this program allows me to do that. I remember one time this girl asked me, you know, how do you keep the obsession down? And I was talking to Michael about it, and he's telling me just what I was telling you guys about, that I started going to a lot of meetings, and, you know, like I'm in only 3 OA meetings a week, but I'm in AA meetings, and I'm also in Al-Anon, so I'm not to confuse the newcomer. If you're just here for OA and that's all you do, just keep that first and go to a lot of meetings there. You know, we usually tell people to wait a year in AA before you start going off on these other programs, because when I start going to all kinds of other programs all at once, I get loose focus. So from here, and to be absent, I've got to focus on OA. So I go to my meetings in OA and try to have a good foundation, reading my literature, calling people. You know, I was calling people, like a couple of people a day. Now I'm lucky enough, God has blessed me with a couple of sponsees, so they call me and I got to listen to their stuff, and I don't want to pick up the phone and hear their stuff. But, you know, Michael hears my crap, so I got to listen to yours, right? So, and it always does me good when they call me. You know, one of my sponsees was having a tough time, and she or he still showed up at the Thanksgiving meeting that day, and that was good. Another sponsee showed up there because he's been having trouble, so he calls me 7 days a week. He calls me mostly 7 days a week. He misses once in a while, a day here, a day there. But they're calling me. That foundation is what helps me to eat healthier, and when I eat healthier, I mean, the weight comes off. I mean, it doesn't take a lot of exercise, you know, because I was exercising a lot when I was out there. That's probably between that and my high, you know, intense self, the way I was, is probably the only reason I didn't go to become 300 or 400 pounds, because the way I was eating, I should have been, without a doubt. So does that answer your question? Okay. Yes, miss.
Thank you. You talked about a comparison between when you plan versus when you don't plan. Do you mind talking about what steps you take to get back into planning, especially when maybe you don't feel willing to?
Well, usually my sponsor will call me on it, because I'm calling him 7 days a week, so he'll call me on it. And I try to get my...
question, John.
Oh, sorry. The question was, how to, when I fall out of planning my food, how do I get back into planning on it? And the answer is always my higher power, God as I understand him. You know, for me, if I don't go to my higher power, nothing's going to work for me in this program. That's it. I mean, I can't soft pedal my higher power. You know, if it wasn't for God, I'd have nothing. And God, as I understand him, gives me everything I got, whether it's at work or anywhere. If I'm having trouble at work, I have to hit my knees. If I'm having trouble planning my food, I have to ask God, you know, I hit my knees. You know, Jews don't pray on their knees except once a year. But, you know, I pray on my knees every single day and throughout the day. I pray on my knees before I go to work, and I ask God to please help me keep my food clean. And to keep it clean means I got to plan it out. So I write it out usually the night before when I'm doing my little 10-step. And then Michael asks me to do these three gratefuls and Yahoo, and then I'm my food commitment. So every single day I have my food written down on paper, you know, and by doing that, that's my action plan, and that's my food plan every day. And I also have to text them in when it's different, you know, because when I try to change food on my own, and it doesn't matter what reason it is, whether my kids want to go somewhere different at the last minute, it doesn't matter. I have to at least text in or call them in. In the old days, in the earlier days, I was calling them all the time. I was calling them probably, Michael probably twice a day, sometimes three times a day, much to his punishing the poor bastard. I called him so much. But he helped me with my food a lot. So calling my sponsor helps me do that. So it says time's up. So I guess that's it. Okay, so